Okay, so today hopefully will be a shorter lecture. So last time we talked about the components of the cell, the organelles, right? So if you think of a cell as an organism, then the organelles are the bits and pieces that do different things to the cell. And remember last time we talked about the different organelles, including mitochondria and chloroplast. I remember that we talked about how those guys are kind of, they have their own double membranes, right? And then they have their own DNA, so it looks like they might be kind of creatures within creatures, right? Residing without you, like bacteria in humans. And then we went on to talk about nucleus and ribosomes, things like that. So today, instead of doing the geography of the cell like we did last time, we're going to look at the time dimension. So last time we looked at kind of the cell and what each part is going to do. Today we're going to look at how those guys cooperate together to run the life of the cell. So what the cell actually looks like in time, right? And it turns out basically they're dividing a lot. Now, other than the things that I told you about last time, which is like ribosomes making proteins from genetic material, which is kind of happening during the phase of the cell when nothing is going on other than growth. The other types of this time the cell's doing something is called mitosis, is where they're dividing. Okay, so this is what I'll talk about today. So we know that cells come from cells, so you know, all the living organisms, they divide. And the cell division, basically, what you need to do is to be able to have a copy of the DNA, which is your genetic material, and provide it to your offspring. That's the point. Because remember what we talked about last time with the three steps I talked about, right? So you have the replication of the DNA, because you need to keep track of that genetic material. And then you need to transcribe it to a form that's readable, right? And then after you transcribe it, then you translate it. You translate that information into protein. And then that protein is going to go out and actually do stuff, okay? So what that means is that the first part of that, what I just said, is you need to actually have your DNA copied and given to your daughter cells, right? So when they say daughter cell, that just means your offspring. Cells that come off from that original first cell. Turns out there's kind of in eukaryotes, there's two main ways of doing this. So one is called mitosis, okay? Mitosis is simply just plain division. So there's no genetic information being exchanged. It's just a division of one cell into two identical cells, right? So if the DNA is copied faithfully, right? So we'll talk about a little bit in the genetics, but if it's copied faithfully, and if there was an error, it gets repaired, for instance, then what happens is that you get two identical cells that come from that single original cell. So the offspring that come out are called somatic cells, okay? It just means, somatic cells just means that they're not used for sex, basically. Gametes. They're not gametes, which are used for sex. So the other type of division is called meiosis right here. We're not going to talk about that today, but I'll briefly describe it, and next time we're going to use that information. So meiosis are actually, you're not getting the usual type of cell. Okay. Remember that humans and other organisms have two copies of a certain chromosome, right? So for everything, you basically have two copies of something. Right? And that comes from DNA replication during the interphase, right? So, which I'll talk about later. But that, in meiosis, the goal is not to get identical cells. The goal is actually to get these things called germ cells, right? Germ cells are, another word for them is gametes. But basically what happened is that you're actually distributing your chromosome differently. You're actually dividing into four. What you do is actually you replicate, and then after replicate, now you have two copies of everything, right? So you have the capability of having four different single chromosome offsprings. Okay, this part's kind of tricky, okay? So after you copy, you have now double copies of all the chromosomes, right? So you can theoretically actually divide it into four, okay? But anyways, I will talk about the intricacies of that next time. But basically, the main idea, though, is that instead of getting identical cells, somatic cells, you're getting these things called germ cells, which are basically used for sex. So basically, you have single copied cells. So the end product are the single copy cells, so half the chromosome, that's why. Right? And then they're going to combine with each other, the male with the female, after sexual things. Okay? So that's where the reproduction and the genetic recombination happens, because it's different now, right? The end product of that merger between two germ cells from different human beings, a mother and a father, for instance, is going to give you new genetic material. They're not going to be identical cells. And the offsprings are going to have different properties, right? A combination of properties from the mom and the dad. But today, though, we're only just talking about mitosis, because that is the main thing that's happening throughout the body and cells themselves. So again, I just said, but DNA has to be copied, right? You have to be copied before you can divide. And then the other thing is that there's, we talked about last time about how DNA is organized into chromosomes, right? So you have the double-stranded DNA, which gets coiled and coiled further, and they combine with proteins, remember, right? So I'll talk about it again. But chromosome, or the chromatin, is actually the word for the DNA plus the protein that it's rounding around, right? So these they're called histone proteins. You don't have to know that, but once the DNA is bound over the histone protein, they get kind of this distribution where it's like a bead and then a string, bead and then a string, and then the round up nature of that gets them to be super compacted. The protein allows the DNA to be in a very compact form. And then when you need to replicate it, you actually need to go in there and kind of evacuate, basically. You open up the little place where the DNA is binding to the protein, and then you take out the strand, and then you copy it, each one. Okay. So that's how DNA is organized, and you need to actually do the copying before the reproduction, which is the mitosis. Okay, so again, in humans, you have 23 copies of the chromosome, right? So basically, one originally came from a dad, one originally came from the mom, but you have 23 copies of that, and that's the somatic cells. And then again, gametes, you only have one copy of that, okay? Because you have one for, you know, so for instance, mom is going to have one, right, in the gamete, in the sex cells. And the dad is going to have one also. And then they combine, and there's genetic recombination. And then the offspring now also still now has two, because there's one from mom and from dad. Okay, anyways, if you're confused about that, I still talk about it next time, so you don't have to worry about it. But right now, just know that we're going to talk about mitosis. And in mitosis, you're hopefully getting identical cells. I say hopefully because sometimes there are some errors that can occur, but the cells tries to fix it. Okay. Any questions so far? A lot of words in this lecture this time, because I wanted to have it in the slide so you guys can look it up, because I think last time we were saying that sometimes I just tell you everything by mouth, and you're like, what? What's going on? Right. Even I don't know what's going on. Right? Okay. So, all right. So let me say it in words and put it on the paper this time. Okay. So here's the kind of general process that can occur. This is just a preview of what we're going to talk about. So during the division, what you have to do is the chromosomes have to condense, What that means is that instead of in this kind of decondensed a fluid form, the chromosomes have to come together and compact even more. Okay? The reason is that you need everything together before you can divide it up. Right? Most of the time when you need the DNA to be transcribed, the chromosomes are actually decondensed. So what that means is kind of the proteins are kind of separated, and then the other proteins are going in there and transcribing the DNA, right? But now, when you're doing division, you actually need to have everything together now. You know, forget about synthesis of proteins now. You're going to put everything together, and all those DNA is going to compact together, and then that's why the chromosome is condensed. So you can actually see it in the microscope, as I'll show you later. The sister chromatids, remember you have copies of the chromosome, right? So that they have to be joined in terms of the sisters, right? So originally they came from mom and dad, right? But anyways, these sister chromatids, so in other words, the two copies of each of the 23 that we talked about, right? Those guys are actually joined together by these things called cohesins, which are just proteins, right? Cohesin, you know, the easy way to think about it is like cohesion means like, right? If everybody's cohesive, then everybody like stand up together, sit down together, right? That's what it means to be cohesive. So cohesin is the protein that joins those sisters together. And then the centromere is actually the region of DNA where these chromatids are actually joined to each other. Right. So in other words, the cohesins join the centromere together. But there's only one centromere for each pair of sister chromatids. Does that make sense? So in other words, you have, for instance, you have 23 in humans, right? So if you have 23 and two copies of each, right? Two from originally from the parents, then what that means is that the centromere, there's going to be 23 of them only because it's joining those sister chromatids together. Okay? Is that clear? So centromere is the place where these copies of the chromosomes are joined, and they are joined by these proteins called cohesins. Right? I'm just telling you that, you know, but in science, they actually figure these things out. Okay. So cytokinesis is the next part of this cell cycle. So mitosis is where the DNA kind of gets divided, and then the cytokinesis is a term for the division of the other parts of the cell. So remember I said cytoplasm is kind of everything that's in the cell. It's like the fluid inside the cell. And the cytokinesis is the part where it actually divides the meat of the cell, like the actual machinery. So there's actually, turns out, a lot of other things that can happen. For instance, I won't talk about today, but you actually need to divide the mitochondria too. So they reproduce on their own and then separate also. That's part of cytokinesis. Okay. Again, the important thing about, you don't have to know the details, but the important thing is that mitosis, the daughter cells, get the full set. You're getting a whole copy of everything. Meiosis, you only get one set of them, and then they're going to genetically recombine. And you have one centromere for each chromosome that's already duplicated. So they're duplicated, they're joined by these cohesins at the centromere, and then you separate them, the two, right? Because you want the full copies. Okay. All right, so this is what it looks like. The chromosomes here are in the blue, and then what's happening here is that actually there's these fibers right here, they're called microtubules. Okay, so cells have, in addition to the organelles I told you about last time, but they have a lot of these machinery for moving things around. Right, so one of them is called microtubules, and it turns out the microtubules are kind of going to be attached to two poles of the cell, and then they're going to pull those copies of the chromosomes separately out to each side. I'll show you what I mean in a second. So this is what it looks like. This is what it looks like when the chromosome is condensed. Okay, so that means it's in the form where it's ready to be pulled apart. So again, these are sister chromatids, so they're identical copies. So they, what I said last time, what I said just before, you have a lot of the copying of the material, and then they're joined together in the centromere. Right? So these copies now are going to be pulled apart during division. But this is what it looks like when it's condensed like this, and it's ready for mitosis. Okay. This is generally the what is actually going on. Okay. So again, you have these chromosomes, and this is the centromere region where the cohesins attach, right? So again, you have the double-stranded DNA, and then what happens is that during we'll talk about it later, but there's a gap phase in which the cells are just doing stuff, but also it's replicating DNA. When it's replicating the DNA, that means the chromosome is actually getting duplicated. You're getting two copies of the same thing, if everything works out. So that means that you're getting this shape that now looks like a double, you know, like a little star-shaped, starfish kind of thing, right? So these two guys are going to be sister chromatids. And then in mitosis, basically, you're just separating them out. Well, this whole process is kind of called mitosis, but I will talk about separate phases of mitosis, in which, in one phase, you're actually separating out these identical copies to give to individual offsprings. Okay? So the end product is that you're getting these identical copies that you were getting before. Okay? Any questions so far? Anything that's not clear? Yeah, Ingrid?
So is the cohesin like an enzyme? Because I don't really get the difference between the centromere and the cohesin.
Yeah. So, good question, because it's confusing, because they seem to be doing the same thing, right? So, cohesins are actually the proteins that join the centromeric regions together. So, when people say centromere, it sounds like it's some special thing, but actually it's just DNA. Okay? Centromere is just it's a part of the DNA. It's the sequence of the DNA where they are joined. So you can think of them as a region of the chromosome. So it's actually nothing special. People say centromere, that sounds something special. But actually, it's just DNA. It's just that particular part where they're joined. But they're going to have to be joined by proteins, right? So because, you know, like the DNA don't just attach to each other. Originally, in the chromosomes themselves, the DNA is already bound to proteins. But in this case, there's another special protein that joins the two copies together, right? And these proteins are cohesins, right? They're not. I don't think they're catalytic, so I don't think we can say enzymes. So Ingrid kind of, she's like looking ahead, right? But enzymes actually are proteins that actually do certain functions. They allow chemical reactions to occur. In this case, I think the cohesins are just joining them together. They might have certain catalytic activity, but I'm not aware of them. So is that clear? So cohesins are the proteins that are joining centromeric regions together. Or just centromeres. Good question. Okay, so let's move on. I said I gave you a little preview last. Now that mitosis is actually going to be intermingled with other parts of the cell cycle in which you're not doing distribution, separation of the DNA. So that phase is called interphase, right? So to remember the English better, interphase means it's like between phases, and the phase is kind of mitosis. And interphase is kind of in between, so that's why it's called interphase. It turns out there's actually different separate parts of the interphase. There's this thing called G1, followed by the S, followed by G2. I'll show you that later again. But The important one is kind of like S, which is synthesis, basically they call it. Because during the S phase of interphase, you have duplication of the chromosome. And actually, this is, you know, you can, it kind of happens slowly. Mitosis is really fast, interphase is really long. That's where most of the life cycle of the cell are sitting, right? So during S phase, you're actually duplicating the chromosome, copying DNA, right? So in general, it takes a long time, right? Like I was just saying. So S phase, for instance, could be 10 or 12 hours in humans. Mitosis is really short, comparatively speaking. It just happens. You don't have to know like the particular details of you know, subphase of interphase, but I'll just tell you about it. But G1, for instance, the one that comes before S phase, actually sometimes is longer and sometimes is shorter, depending on the cell type, right? So for those of you who are interested, for instance, in fibroblasts, right, which are always reproducing, like skin cells, for instance, then they're going to be relatively shorter because they need to be reproducing all the time, right? So, and G1 is usually what you think of as the cell because that's where it's actually doing its work. Like cells are doing what it's supposed to do, you know, liver cells breaking down chemicals, for instance. That's where it's actually sitting in the G1. So in liver cells, then you don't want to have lots of reproduction because it needs to be in G1 a lot to do its job, for instance. Okay, so so that's what G1 is. G2 is kind of just preparation for mitosis, right? So it's going to be getting those nuclei ready and things like that. Okay, so in G2 you also have the kind of you have the uncondensed chromosome that's getting condensed because it needs to be going back to, into mitosis. The envelope is still there, but now it's kind of getting ready for mitosis, right? So I just said this. In G1, you have the normal function, and what we know the cell to be, that's G1. Okay, so this is the interface. So this is all just preparation, getting things ready. Okay. Okay. This is what the cell cycle looks like. Again, the cell is going to sit mostly in the G1, right? And then you have synthesis of the DNA, which is you open up those protein DNA compartments, duplicate that DNA, making copies of them so that you have two copies of that chromosome. They're still relatively decondensed because they don't need to be condensed for the until mitosis, right? So you're just making copies, and then G2 is where that kind of starts to happen, right? So preparing the DNA, preparing all the machinery, getting the microtubules set, you know, and then you go into mitosis. And mitosis actually is going to be what we're going to talk about mostly in this lecture. Okay, I'm going to talk about some subphases of the mitosis where you can see things happening. Okay, and it turns out it's just really quick, but it has its subphases. And then after mitosis, where you're distributing the DNA, you actually have cytokinesis, which distributes the other parts of the cell, right, the cytoplasm. Okay, the end product is now that you have two cells. Any questions so far about mitosis and the cell cycle? So this is the cell in all its glory, cycles of the cell. Cool, all right, all clear. All right, let me see. I was going to take roll, but let's do this and then I'll take roll. Okay, so so these are going to be sub-steps of mitosis. So actually, let me give you a preview and then I'm going to take roll, okay, because I don't want to be too late. Okay, so let me give you a preview of mitosis. It turns out there are different phases of mitosis, okay? You don't have to memorize everything per se, but there are certain phases that are more memorable than others. So it kind of just comes naturally if you read more about it to kind of just know it. I give you a really, really quick preview, and then I will talk about things in detail, okay? So basically, in mitosis, there's a prophase where you're getting things ready, right? You're condensing that chromatin and getting things ready. And then you have a metaphase at which the chromosomes are going to be aligned, okay? The key thing that you see in metaphase, which is a part of mitosis, is alignment of that DNA chromosome on a plane. Okay, that's the characteristic. And then after that, you have anaphase, which is really short, but basically in anaphase, you're cleaving those proteins that join the chromosomes together, and then you're attaching these guys to opposite poles, okay? And then you're pulling those guys apart, right, in anaphase. And then in telophase, basically, is what happens kind of shortly afterwards. You're forming two nuclei, right, in the same cell right now still. And then the separate nuclei is going to have each one copy of the original DNA that you had. And then finally, in cytokinesis, which is following mitosis, you're going to pinch those cells into two, and you're actually going to get the end product. Okay? So I will talk about this in detail, but I wanted to give you a preview, and then I want to take roll. Okay, so let me do that now. Yuichiro, is he here? No? Okay. Yushin, here. Leia. Jennifer, here. Kolo is here. Sakura? Okay. Ingrid? Akari? Akemi? June? Makoto? Oh, okay. I'm learning names. Aigeru? Sayaka? Then Yuri? No Yuri. Aoi? No. Shinji? No Shinji. Susanna? Okay. Mask. Okay. Minho? Okay, Master. Alexander? Okay. All right. So, okay. Thank you all for being here, despite the rain.
It's been raining like every single day.
Oh, really? That's good. It's telling you to be indoors, which means be in my class. Okay. So any questions so far? Anything at all? People who are late, it's okay. No problem. Okay, that's good. You guys are smart, so you guys already know some of this. So, but anyway, let me know if there's any problems. Okay. I just talked about it, but to reinforce your knowledge after that break, I'm going to talk about everything over again, very slowly. Okay? Okay. So, again, these are sub-stages of mitosis, first of all. Okay? So forget about that interface stuff that I talked about. That's just getting ready. Okay? So now we're actually going to talk about the core important mechanics of mitosis, right? And so these are subphases of mitosis. So the first one is prophase. So you can think of it for the English studying audience out there, which some of you are out there, I know. But the pro, right, it's like before something happens, kind of pro, so that's prophase, right? That's how you remember it. So in prophase, again, remember, before prophase, that chromatin, that chromosome, is still relatively decondensed. So what that means is that it's copied, but it's not compactified. Okay? So in prophase, first of all, you're kind of compacting that DNA, condensing. So the official term for that is you condense the chromatin, condense that chromosome. All right. And then nucleolus actually disappears. So nucleolus, remember, is where the RNA is, right, inside the nucleus. Right. So that's just a characteristic people look for. So they look at the nucleus and they go, oh, wait, that nucleolus is now gone. Right? So, because remember what I said, during mitosis, you don't need your ribosomes to be doing shit, right? Because you already did all your shit during G1, G2, right? So there's no more shitting going on, okay? So that's why you don't need your RNA so much anymore. Your ribosome's already made. It can do its own stuff in the cell already. So that nucleolus can just go away. And the other thing is that you want it to go away because now you want to form new nuclei. Sorry, it's not nucleus, it's nuclei, okay? It sounds funny, but nuclei, right? Actually, how would you say nucleolus double? Nucleoli? Actually, I don't know. Nucleolus? Nucleoli, probably. Nucleoli, probably. Okay. Sorry. Getting all checked. So the nuclei, you need to have formed new nuclei. So that's why those things are happening. So the chromatids are now going to be joined. Remember, these are the copies. I might have given you the wrong impression last time, what I just said before. But the copies are actually copies of your entire set, right? So the guys that you inherited from your mom and dad, you're having copies of both of them. I might have not given you very clear information. You're getting information from both your dad and your mom, but then you're getting copies of each of one of those. So you have multiple, you have, basically you have 23, but you have 20, you have copies of them. Okay, you have copies of everything. So 2 times 23, one from each mom and dad, right? But you have doubles of that, so it's 4 times of that. Because you need to copy everything before you distribute. So that at the end, you're still having 2 times 23. Okay? Anyways, it's a little bit tricky, yeah? Oh, I see. That's a great question. Yeah. So the question is, like, was it really one chromosome from one pair, right? One copy from the mom, one copy from the dad. You know, if it's happening regularly, like if it's normal. Like, for instance, you have some diseases where they could be getting different, you know, for instance, X chromosome or Y chromosome. So I can't talk about it today, but next time I talk about how basically you're getting X chromosome from your mom and Y chromosome from your dad, right? But it depends on whether the dad gives you the Y or gives you the X, because it has a copy of them. It has an X or Y. But if you're getting the X, then the mom gives you the X, then you're a girl. And then if the dad gives you a Y, then you become a boy because you have the X and the Y, right? So there's where it depends on which one you're getting. But all the other ones, the somatic ones, right, you should be getting one copy each. But this, and this is where it addresses your question, when you're getting that one copy, it doesn't mean that one copy now is going to be exactly the same, because basically, the fertilization, where the genetic recombination happens, you actually have exchange of parts of the chromosome. So in other words, pieces of the chromosome actually break off and exchange. I'll talk about that a little bit in the genetics. So what that means is the final product chromosome doesn't necessarily look like the original you got from mom and dad. I mean, if it's exactly the same, then you should be, you know, like you should have identical eye that's from your mom and identical nose from your dad or something, right? But it's not identical. You know, like when we see people, it's a new human being. Because they're all new human beings. And the reason for that is because you have recombination, like I was saying. The chromosomes actually exchange information with each other before they actually further divide during meiosis.
So is it possible that you
have
a copy, but you don't show it like what the copy has to be?
Yeah, that is also possible. Yeah. So it's also possible that what you just said, basically, is that you're getting the copy and you didn't get genetic recombination, which is also possible, but that copy now is going to do different things in the new offspring because of what you just said, which is they are regulated differently. That's also possible. So what that means is that, for instance, you have like methylation, which you add certain groups to DNA to kind of silence, you know, certain genes, for instance, or overexpress certain genes. So when that happens also, you're getting different information coming from your original DNA transcript, right? Yeah. So actually, that is what that process is just called. So this is kind of extra information, but I think it's interesting. But what that process is called is epigenetics. So epi just means beyond genetics. So what that means is that you actually go in there and modify certain bits and pieces to regulate the DNA without actually changing the DNA. Right? So you regulate when the DNA is going to be transcribed, and therefore which proteins are going to be expressed. So you have the original information, but now you're going to say, I only want this information from the DAO, for instance, or I only want that information. Right? I mean, it turns out the X and Y chromosome are actually regulated like that. Because if the mom has two X chromosomes, you don't need both to be, you know, useful, right? So it turns out one of the X's are actually kind of like regulated to be like, okay, I don't need this extra information. And when you have problems, such as when you have extra chromosomes, then those kind of things get messed up. That's why you have these diseases in which, you know, the expression, mostly overexpression of certain proteins cause lots of problems because of the genetic abnormality. Okay, these are great questions. Anything else? That might have been a lot of information for you guys, but that was just for fun, okay? That was just extra credit, right? Okay. All right, so prophase we talked about. So again, we join those chromatids. So again, I didn't say this, but spindles, that's microtubules, okay? I should have put that in the slides, but spindles are microtubules. And during prophase, you're actually having those guys being set up now, right? And they're going to radiate out from the centrosome. So centrosome, I mean, this is another... Centrosome is not the same as centromere, but a lot of times people kind of use it somewhat interchangeably. But centrosome is actually the opposite side. So basically, how do you say it? Let me show you in the picture. Right, so centrosomes are kind of these guys up here on the opposite poles. Right. So remember, centromeres are these guys within, right? And that's where the cohesins are. But centrosomes are actually the opposite poles, right? So the opposite poles are where these spindles are actually going to originate. So these microtubules are going to come out, right? It's kind of creepy, right? So you think of it as like this monster story. I think of it as kind of life cycle monster vampire version, right? So you have these guys on the opposite pole, they kind of grab, you know, these microtubules come out, and start grabbing the chromosomes, right? And then once they grab it, they kind of pull it to opposite poles, right? So that's what is going to happen. There's actually a term for these kind of regions. These are actually called asters, but you don't have to know that, actually. But you also don't even have to know centrosome. But you just have to know that there's some opposite pull where these microtubules are coming out, which are also called spindles are coming out. And the idea is that they're going to latch on to these chromosomes, right? And that starts in the prophase, okay? There's kind of a pseudo phase that's like not quite a phase, but we sometimes name it a phase, called pro-metaphase. This one's really easy, okay? Because it's just, you have elements of the prophase and even elements of the next one, which is metaphase. So scientists are like, dude, what do I call that? Like, why don't we just call it, do we call it prophase 2? Do we call it pre-metaphase? Why don't we just call it pro-metaphase? So it's called pro-metaphase. Okay, so there, the nuclear envelope is now going to disappear, right? So the nucleoli already disappears, so now the at that point there's only one nucleolus. The nucleolus disappears, and then already, so now pro-metaphase, now we can get rid of the envelope as well. Right, so the envelope for the nucleus disappears. That's how you have the access of the spindles to the chromosomes, which are inside the nucleus. Okay, there's another protein that you're going to hear a lot about, and this one you should be aware of, and it's called kinetochore, right? And the kinetochore is at the centromere, so it's in the central region here. And the kinetochore, what it does is that it's the protein, so cohesins just attach the centromere together. But during mitosis, you have a bigger complex, because in order to do the big job of separation, you need this big kinetochore complex. So the kinetochore complex comes in and forms at the centromere. It's more of a heavy machinery kind of a thing. Okay? And the reason you need that is because you need the attachment of the microtubule. The cohesin doesn't do anything like that. The cohesin just attaches these DNA guys together. Right? That's what we said last time. It's not really enzymatic. There's no enzyme activity. But the kinetochore is there because you need to now attach that to the spindles. So you need more heavy machinery. And the spindle also turns out have their own proteins, right? Motor proteins, so that it can move as well. So that's why that's there. So during the pro-metaphase, you have these kinetochore complexes that kind of join, like it's going to join the centromere, right? Dead star two things start coming together, and then you have these spindles. While you're studying this, just like Star Wars, Vampire, whatever, that will help you a lot. Trust me. Okay. All right. So spindles are coming in from opposite pole, opposite asters, and then they're going to join to the kinetochore. Right? So I would say that's kind of the characteristic of pro metaphase, is that you have these complexes formed. So I can show you here a little bit. In the pro metaphase, these guys are actually going to form together. So I should have shown you this with the pictures. Okay, so remember at interphase, so this is just getting ready. These are just getting, so for instance, you have the centrosomes, which are going to be opposite poles. They're getting ready. The chromosome is now duplicated already, okay? So they're already duplicated, but you can't really see them because they're not condensed, right? And everything is where it should be. But prophase, which is the start of mitosis, is where things start happening. You have the characteristic of these guys being condensed, right, so that you can see the chromosomes, and then the nucleoli is now gone, nucleolus is gone, okay, and then the spindles are actually going to form, right, so what I just said before. And then again, pro-metaphase, the characteristics that you have these kinetochore complexes now moving to opposite sides, and then the nuclear envelope is going to be broken down, right? And then microtubules are going to come in and actually attach to the kinetochores, which are where the centers of the chromosomes, where they're joining the pairs of chromosomes together, the copies of the chromosome, right? Pairs, which are chromatids, together. Okay, so they're still joining. And actually, if you notice, some of the microtubules join to the kinetochore, where the centromeres are, and some of them actually do not. They actually just radiate out here. Okay? So some of them do, some of them don't. Okay? I'll tell you about that in a second. So is it clear so far into metaphase? Going into metaphase? Because the next part is kind of the very characteristic of mitosis. I keep building it up, and it's like, okay, not there yet. Okay, now we're still not there, but And now is the big next big thing, which is metaphase. Okay, so metaphase, you have these regions that ultimately is where the chromosome is going to be distributed to, and now they're going to be on opposite poles, right? And the characteristic of metaphase, again, is that the chromosomes are lying on a plate in the center, right? It's actually a plane. It's not a one-dimensional thing. It's actually a plane, like this, right? Because they're kind of like, you know, up and down and all over, because the cell is three-dimensional. And then you have these vampire spindle things grabbing them onto opposite plates. So what you're doing is you're lining the chromosome on what is called the equator, right? And that quote-unquote equator is just called the metaphase plate. It's the plate that characterizes the metaphase. So this is what it looks like. So this is metaphase, right? We got everything more or less ready. These spindles are now going to be in very distinct shapes. And the microtubules are going to come in and join the centromere at the kinetochore. Okay. Is that clear? There's a lot of language here, but I hope you understand the basic idea. So this metaphase plate is going to form, and then you have these opposite centrosomes at each, which is ultimately the destination of yourself, of the information in yourself. Okay, so that's metaphase. Pretty simple, right? You just form this plate. The next part after metaphase is called anaphase. So anaphase is also very characteristic because it's really short. It's the shortest one of mitosis. And in anaphase, what happens is that you're actually going to allow these sister chromatids to come apart. So these copies of the DNA to come apart. And the cohesions are now cleaved, right? So you're cleaving that proteins that hold them together. And then the kinetochore, which does something different, remember, right? The kinetochore is going to attach to the microtubule, right? It's not the cohesion. The cohesion is actually attached to the DNA. But you're going to cleave the cohesions, and then the kinetochore complexes, which have microtubules attached, are now going to move to opposite poles. And the way it does that is that the microtubule is actually kind of shortened, right? It turns out there are actually questions about how that pulling actually happens, and I'll talk about it in the remaining part of the lecture, because it's kind of tricky, but I'll talk about that later, is how that actually pulling happens. But for now, just remember that the kinetochore microtubules having attached them are now going to pull them apart. And so this is kind of the actual process, right? It looks like this. It's like, I don't want to go, you're gone. Okay? You can see the, it's like you're, think about two little kids, right? Inseparable little kids, but no, I don't want to go. And then once that goes here, because that goes there, and they got pulled apart. Okay? All right, two inseparable friends get pulled apart. Okay. This is life cycle. The story, right? Okay, so, and then after that, you have telophase, which is basically kind of wrapping up, because you need to form the new nuclei, right? And then from the old envelope, now you have the new nuclear envelope, and then I'm actually going to dim this a little bit. And then you have the chromosomes, which are now going to start to decondense, right, because it's kind of over. So in telophase, this is what it looks like. You have formation of the new nuclei, and then the spindles are going to be gone, and then it's starting to separate the cell as well. Because in cytokinesis, you have the pinching of the cells into two. And I'll talk about that in more detail later, but in cytokinesis, it turns out that you form this thing called cleavage furrow, which is this little pinch thing here, because this cleavage furrow is now going to actually cleave and kind of actually separate the cell into two. Right? It needs to have membrane there, and then it forms actually two different cells. Okay, is it clear so far? I think I need to move forward a little bit now. So, okay, here we go. Just to reinforce your knowledge, this is what it looks like all the way there. So maybe imagine in your mind what phase you would categorize each of these things, right? So first of all, these guys are already condensed, right? So you're getting kind of into the prophase, prometaphase kind of area, right? And then what you notice is actually it's going to start to line up. These are going to, it's a little bit messy, but you can kind of see things going on. You can also see there's a lot of activity going on elsewhere too. And then after it's lined up, it's going to anaphase, right? Boom. Things get separated. Looks really cool, huh? And then you form two cells, telophase, boom, over. Anaphase, super fast, right? You're just watching the video. Oh, wait, it just happened. Like you missed. It's like you just took a little nap and it's over. Okay. So that's what it looks like. That's what the mitosis of the cell looks like. Most of the time, not doing much. Boom, it happens, it's gone. Right. It's like watching sumo. Right. Okay. I'm going to give you the same information, but just a little bit more detail. You don't have to know every single detail here, but you should be just kind of aware of them. Okay. So the microtubules consists of its own units. Actually, I don't think I'm going to talk about much about that, but it has its own units, and then that units actually, people think, shorten as you pull things apart. Okay, so the centrosome that's on each side actually organizes the microtubules, right? Remember, that's what the aster complexes are. It turns out in the centrosome you have these other proteins called centrioles, which are actually, it turns out, not really doing much of anything, but they characterize what it looks like. That's why people refer to them. But the centrosome, remember, I mean, I think maybe all you should be aware of is that the centrosomes are the ones here and here, right? And the idea is just that it's organizing the microtubules, because ultimately you want these two new pools to form the centers of the new cells. Okay. So maybe that's what I should say. Okay. And again, by pole metaphase, these two guys are already on opposite poles. And then you have the microtubule array coming out of that pole. Right? And again, the kinetochore is actually, there's kind of one for each side, basically. Because you need to have attachment of the microtubule of one copy going to one centrosome, and the other copy going to the other one, right? So basically, there's actually two kinetochores that's attached to different microtubules, right? And they go to opposite sides. Okay, so that's the key thing. And then they're gonna tug, and they're gonna tug each other, right? So in the metaphase, actually, you're not necessarily pulling, because the microtubule is gonna put them in the plate first. So it's kind of a tug of war, right? It's like, come here. No, this guy needs to be formal. Okay, let's, you know, put everything into place. Interior designer is like, no, over there, no, not there. Okay, so you're gonna put them carefully into this plate first, and then you're gonna pull, right? And the cohesions are still attached, so that you can do this kind of tug of war, right? Because you have one microtubule from this side, one microtubule from that side. And these tubulin units are going to now either increase or decrease and put them on the right place. Okay. So now this is where the enzyme comes in, actually, because the cohesions now need to be cleaved. And once you cleave those cohesions, you're going to allow these chromatids to go to opposite poles, right? So in other words, there's an active process where the enzyme goes in and cleaves the thing that's joining these sister chromatids together. Okay, and then one issue here, just for fun, really, but I wanted to tell you about, are the issue of how this pooling actually occurs. Okay, so the idea basically is that, are you doing things from the spindle pull? So are you doing this at the central zone, basically, right? Where is this where it's really happening? Or is it happening at the kinetochore complex, where the kinetochore is joined to the microtubule, right? So it turns out there's kind of two different models, and there was some scientific controversy, and there were a lot of experiments done to figure out one or the other, right? So one model is that, well, it's really just happening at the pole, at the centrosome, and those tubulin units are getting decreased, right? They're just gone. So you really just, that microtubule is the same, everything else, but you're just kind of slightly pulling them forward, right? Because if those tubulin units starts disappearing, then your microtubule starts disappearing, basically. So that's one possibility. The other possibility, they call the, I love this, this is like the canonical, how do you say, biology name, right? The Pac-Man model. Pac-Man model. So the Pac-Man model is that the kinetochore actually is actually going to walk along the protein, walk along the microtubule, tubulin units, right? And what that means is actually it's going to shorten at the chromatin end. So what I told you before is that if you shorten at the centrosome end, it's just kind of the same, right? Pulled together. But this guy is saying, no, it's not like that. It's not this simple thing from the centrosome because there's not much going on in the centrosome. This model says actually the kinetochore complex, which is attached to that to the DNA, is actually walking along the microtubule. It walks along and then the opposite edge disappears. Walks along, disappears. Walks along, disappears. So it's an active process where it's actually, you know, that's why it's called Pac-Man. It's actually eating up individual microtubule units, tubulin units, right? So Pac-Man model for kinetochore. It turns out that both models are somehow correct. So when you actually go in there and look at the literature, I actually looked into this because I was like, ooh, this is cool, Pac-Man, you know. But it turns out, I think, this model was definitely kind of validated in some sense. But it turns out there could be this model a little bit going on as well. And also there's some cell type specificity as well. But the short story is that seems like both models are saying something, although the Pac-Man model seems to be a little bit more influential. People seem to like the Pac-Man model. Right. Okay, so I talked about last time, or just before, how there's some microtubules that do not go to chromosomes, right? Remember? So that's this slide right here, where some of the microtubules are just, you know, they're just talking to each other, I guess. They're not doing anything with the DNA. So it turns out these non-kinetochore microtubules are actually going to contact each other and push each other around. So the reason you need that is actually the cell, you know, after forming those two centrosomes on the opposite poles, they actually need to elongate so that you have a bigger area to work with for your new cell. So these microtubules are actually going to push each other. So if you think about it, it's kind of pulling the kinetochore and pushing each other. Right? So that means it's pushing the centrosome and centriole complexes farther away as it's pulling the chromosome. So actually, you can see this here, right? So remember, right about here, right? So the cell's like this, and then boom, it's kind of, you know, stretching a little bit. Okay? And as it's stretching, boom, at the end here, it's going to kind of pull out, right? I know you guys love watching this. This is fun stuff. Okay. So I gave you kind of the core information. So this is what it generally looks like. This is a summary of what I just talked about. You have these kinetochores, which are attached to the spindles, which are attached to each of the different poles. And again, you have different mechanisms for how to bring each of these guys to opposite poles, right? Anyways, I think this is fairly clear. So this is, again, kind of extra knowledge, but so the question was that which model is correct, the Pac-Man model versus the polling model, basically. Right? So one experiment you can do is that you can actually put a dye there. In this case, what happens is that they use laser to mark these microtubules. I don't know exactly how, but somehow the laser fluorescence gets marked on these microtubules. And then what happens is that over time, you want to see where this mark is going, basically, right? But it turns out when it does that after a short amount of time, you notice that the mark doesn't really change, but it's hard to see this. But this length right here, this length compared to this, is shortened. You guys see that? So the distance between the mark and the kinetal core is shortened over time. So by marking these proteins, it's able to distinguish one model from the other, right? Because if it was the pooling model, then this mark should move towards the pool, right? Because in the pooling model, you're getting rid of tubulin, you're getting rid of tubulin on the centrosome side, right? So these marks should just go in. But in this particular cell, that's not what it's looking like. What it's looking like is that the mark is stationary and these guys are getting shorter, right? So this particular experiment is consistent with the Pac-Man, because the Pac-Man says the kinetal core is going to eat up the microtubule as it's going along. It's walking along the microtubule. Okay. So anyway, so that's why I think this is one of the reasons that the Pac-Man model seems to be predominant. But again, there are some experiments, I looked it up, that suggest that the pooling model could be doing it in certain cells. Okay. But anyway, but this is the kind of thing that actually scientists actually do, right? So in this course, I'm just telling you stuff. It's kind of just like, you know, stories, right? But if you actually go in and do the experiment, this is where it's fun, because you can actually go in and design an experiment that says, well, can I eliminate one or the other? And this is one example where you can at least say in this particular type of cell that it's one versus the other, right? Okay. And this is what the Pac-Man model is suggesting again. Kinetal core is actually eating up these tubulin units, and these units are going to disappear on one side. Okay, half an hour to get you home. Okay, so we're finished with mitosis, right? So if mitosis is finished, what happens afterwards? What happens afterwards is just as important, if not more so. In fact, this is the next most important thing in the lecture, okay? And it's called cytokinesis. Cyto just means cell. Kinesis means kind of dividing thing. Okay, so cytokinesis is dividing of the cell. Okay, so first of all, it's different from animals to plants. That's a very critical thing. Okay, so in animals, you form this cleavage furrow that I showed you last time, which forms a groove in that plasma membrane between the two daughter nuclei, and it's at the place where originally the metaphase plate was, right? And then you don't have to worry about this other stuff. But basically, proteins come in and pinch the cell into two. All right, so you have an active process where there's filaments. It's kind of similar to microtubules, but not microtubules. They come in and actually pinch actively. All right, so it's called a contractile ring, and it forms over that cleavage sphere and actively forms a new membrane by pinching, right, the cell into two. Right, it's kind of what you would expect if you were doing it. It's like this, right? But in plants, it's different, okay? Plants are more subtle creatures, right? They're more elegant, you know, just get things ready slowly. We're not going to move. You know. So consistent with that, what happens is that in plants, actually, you have these vesicles. Remember I said, so this is why we have to pay attention every day, but the vesicles, right, from last lecture, right, these are just pieces of the membrane, for instance, from the Golgi, not necessarily just from Golgi, but for instance, from the Golgi. But these vesicles are actually going to go to the center of the cell. So this process is a different process, right? These membrane parts are now going to go and sit at the center of the cell where the metaphase plate was and form at that midline, right? So at that midline, what that means is now that you're going to be able to form a new plate of vesicles, right, membranes, basically, on that place that you need to divide. And after it forms there, it fuses together to form a contiguous membrane. And vesicle, because these are single-layer vesicles, right? But if you sit them on a side-by-side, then you have two layers, right? So you have actually two layers forming between them, and then you actually form another layer so that you can have separate cells, right? And after that, you have a new cell wall also, and that's a lot of production of things. So in the plant cells, you actually need to make a lot of stuff. You need to make some carbohydrates to form the new cell wall, for instance. But in the animal, it just kind of pinches. Okay. So this is what the animal cell looks like. Boom, you're just pinching them into two. All right. You have this cleavage. The only term you should know is cleavage furrow. Right? Cleavage furrow is where it's being cleaved. And then in the plant cell, it's different, like I was saying. You still have the separation of the two nuclei, but after that, actually, it's not an active process anymore because, in this case, it's plant cells, they have a cell wall, and those are tough son of a gun, right? Tough things. And you can't just easily pinch them like that. Cell walls are hard. They're carbohydrates. They're kind of solid stuff. So this is why you actually just make new things to separate. You don't just contract. And so you do that first by bringing the vesicles here. After the vesicles are formed, they join together to form a new plate, and that plate kind of joins on each side, and then you form a new cell wall, and then slowly it gets kind of elongated over time. But that takes a long time for plant cells. It's also slower, it turns out. And they also don't need to divide as quickly as well. So, any questions about so far? It's all clear? Pretty simple? Okay. This is just a reminder of what these guys look like. It's now in a plant cell, right? So I just wanted to show you exactly the same thing, but now in a plant cell. Again, prophase, you have these guys being decondensed. In prometaphase, you have, it's hard to see the microtubule structures, but actually the microtubule structures are also being formed on opposite poles. In metaphase, though, you still see the metaphase plate, right? This is the plate, right? The chromosomes are kind of going like this, but the plate is still there. They're still lined up, just like in the animals. In anaphase, you're still getting this pooling of these guys. It's hard to see the microtubules, but they're on opposite poles. And then the key thing is that in telophase, you're already starting to form the new cell, which in cytokinesis is actually going to get ready to have these vesicles sit in a row so that you can form a new cell wall. Okay, so this is what it looks like in a plant cell. Okay. In addition to mitosis, I wanted to give you briefly on a different type of division as well. So what we talked about is more like eukaryotes, right? Eukaryotes, machinery, all that stuff for making stuff, kinetochore, all that stuff. But in prokaryotes, for instance, like bacteria, much simpler organisms, you don't have these crazy mitosis stuff going on. In prokaryotes, you only have these things called fission, right? Binary fission. Because in prokaryotes, you only have a circular DNA, and that's all you need. So you start replication at the one origin, and then you end up having a fork. So I don't have a picture of that. I'm sorry. So if you imagine a circle, basically you need to reproduce that circle. So you need to kind of separate the two strands and then make two circles out. Anyways, I'll show you a picture next time if it's confusing. But basically, you have an origin where the DNA is replicated, and then you, when it's finished replicating, you have two circular DNAs. Okay. Again, there's no microtubules really. You have a different protein that comes in, and you have a pinching of that cell as well. That's why it's called fission. Right? It turns out that people think that evolutionarily, mitosis is kind of a development from prokaryotes. So prokaryotes, you have certain types of more complicated prokaryotes where you're actually getting more compartmentalized division, and then people think that mitosis actually developed from that kind of intermediate form. Anyways, we don't have time to talk about precisely. So this is what it looks like in prokaryotes, in, for instance, bacteria. You have a duplication of these circular DNA. It's not just a circle, I guess. It's a really long circle. Okay. You have an origin of replication where basically you separate out the two strands of DNA and start copying, right? And then after you copy, you have now two different copies. When it's finished, then you just pinch it, just pinch off, binary fission. Okay, it's much simpler. I mean, really all you have to know is that you just copy the DNA and you pinch out, and that's in the prokaryotes. Is it okay? It's not super important. But okay. But what is important though, in the remaining, the next 5-10 minutes, is I talk about how these processes are going to be controlled. Okay? So the cell cycle happens, but how do you regulate going one to the other? Like, what is exactly happening? It turns out there's a lot of machinery going on, okay? I will talk about some of it, but I don't have time to go into very, very specific details, okay? So one thing is that, first of all, there are some experiments done to show that one process or the other was necessary, right? So, for instance, if you fuse one cell with two nuclei, you put two nuclei in one cell, okay? This is possible, and you just suck that nuclei up and push into the one cell that already have one. If one nuclei was already in mitosis or in synthesis phase, then the other nuclei automatically goes there. So there's something contagious going on. There's some signaling going on that during mitosis, there's something that tells the cell what to do, so that even when you have two nuclei in a single cell, they will both divide, basically. Okay, it's kind of crazy, right? Yeah, it's within one cell only, so it's just talking about that one cell, not the other cells. But the crazy thing is though that this is an experiment where they push a nuclei in. This is not what you would see in a regular cell. So great question. But if you did that, you can actually get the other nucleus to divide. That's the kind of cool part. So there's some other signaling going on throughout the cell that's allowing this to happen, or some other protein signal. Okay. We like to sometimes think about the cell cycle as kind of a washing machine. So a washing machine, you have both the outside control and the inside control. In the inside control, these are kind of what they call checkpoints. Once, you know, it's washed, then you rinse, for instance, right? But there's also external control, which is like outside. That person puts in a coin and go like wash, you know, 30 minutes or something, right? So cell cycle is kind of like that. You have some external control and you have internal control with the checkpoints, okay? And the way it does is that there's going to be some terminology here, but I think really the only thing that you need to really know are kinases. Okay, kinases. So remember the phosphate group that I talked about before, right? With the phosphorus. So this is the P with a bunch of oxygens. So these phosphates, it turns out that there are actually special proteins that put these phosphate groups onto proteins. Right? So it's called protein kinases. Okay? protein kinases. Kinases in general means proteins are phosphorylated, okay, that puts phosphate groups into stuff. Okay? And then protein kinases just means that they put phosphate groups onto proteins. So they are kinating on, kinating, that's a new thing. Maybe kinasing, kinating on proteins. That's why they're called protein kinases. They phosphorylate proteins, which just means you put phosphate groups onto proteins. That's all. But when that does happen, you actually either activate or deactivate them. A lot of times it activates. Okay? So for the cell cycle, you have a specific type of kinase. They're called cyclin-dependent kinases. And cyclin basically is going to fluctuate. The level of cyclin actually fluctuates in the cell cycle. So the amount of cyclin actually is going to be high in the S and G1 phase, and then they're going to fall in the M phase. For instance, this is just for example. And these kinases are now actually going to do stuff based on the concentration of the cyclin. So what that means is that you're getting temporal-specific activity of a certain type of protein throughout the cycle of the cell. That's perfect. That's exactly what you want, because the kinases are now going to be doing things at different types points in the cell cycle. Exactly what the washing machine ordered, right? Because it's going to do things at different types time in the cell cycle. And it does this by phosphorylating other things so that it's doing other, you know, for instance, the kinetochore complex and all that other stuff, right? You don't have to know this, but there's another protein that basically triggers mitosis, right? So it's kind of similar types of protein that's dependent on where you are. And when you're an M, then it starts to do phosphorylation. So it's basically the same as kind of a cyclin-dependent kinases, but basically the idea is that they are basically kinases. They phosphorylate things. Right? They're going to phosphorylate, for instance, the inside of the nucleus, and that's how you fragment the nucleus. Right? You get those lamin proteins that hold the nucleus together. And then similarly, in the anaphase, this guy is actually going to destroy itself because it doesn't want to go through mitosis again. So at different types of the cell, parts of the cell cycle, it does different things. Where you need to get rid of the nucleus, it triggers mitosis by, you know, removing the nuclear envelope. But when it's finished, at the conclusion, at the anaphase, it actually destroys itself, basically. It destroys the cyclin so that it can fall during mitosis so that it doesn't occur again. Okay. But the key point basically is that you have these fluctuating levels of proteins that can do things within the cell cycle. Okay. All right. So again, you have checkpoints when certain criteria meet in the checkpoints, these cyclin-dependent kinases go in and actually does its job. And when it does its job, it's able to go through that checkpoint. Right. So this is kind of the same information. Again, the cyclin concentration is going to vary, just like I said before, right? It goes up in mitosis, and then it kind of destroys itself because it doesn't want to go up anymore. You don't want to have another mitosis coming right after the other. And then as the synthesis go on, the G2 phase comes back on, then the cyclin levels increase again, and then you have this repeated thing happening. And same thing with the protein. Same thing with the kinase, right? So they're kind of grouped with each other. They depend on each other. The cyclin level tells you how much this protein is going to be active, right? So the point, though, is that you have a very finely controlled system. A lot of proteins, a lot of kinases that phosphorylate specific things at different types of the cell cycle, and they're going to be activated by the level of cyclin. And the light level of cyclin is also dependent on where the cell cycle is. Everything is finely tuned to be just doing exactly what you need to do at the point that you need to do it. This is how the cell is regulated. Okay. This is kind of similar. I'll just talk a little bit more. It's similar information. You have checkpoints at different parts. For instance, at the G1, once it's ready, it goes on. So remember what I said before is that most cells are sitting in G1. That's where it does its job, right? Now, for cells that don't usually divide, for instance, like liver cells I talked about, and also neurons, it's going to sit right before, basically, G1, G0, I guess. Yeah. It's going to sit where it needs to work. It is not going to divide anymore. But other cells, like skin cells, fibroblasts, they're going to divide a lot because they need to be always dividing. And so that's where the checkpoint thing comes in, right? For different cell types, you have different levels of the cyclin so that you're sitting at different checkpoints. Okay. Okay, that we already talked about when the cohesion gets cleaved. One other thing is that you need actually certain nutrients for the cells to actually divide. So it turns out if you have these things called growth factors and you have nutrients sitting around, you're actually going to have the division of the cells. There are actually things that make this happen more. For example, there are certain growth factors that actually, when you get injured, they'll tell the platelet cells to come in and kind of fix your wound, right? And so when injuries happen, you secrete another growth factor, okay? And that growth factor tells certain cell types, in this case platelet cell types, to go into the site of the injury and start really dividing a lot, right? So what that means is that in addition to these cyclin-dependent types of regulation, growth factors that's like secreted outside the cell also helps you kind of, you know, in an emergency to get those cells dividing if you need to, right? So that is to get more cells. What about if you have too many cells, right? Well, it turns out there are actually controls for how many cells need to divide as well. So you don't want to have too much, right? So first let me... this is kind of the same information, so I'm going to skip this slide. So let's go to here. So growth factors, again, you get them going, you get the cells going. But you can also have inhibition. You don't want to have too much cell division. And for instance, there's a couple of things that does this, right? So one is called density dependence inhibition. What that means is that when it gets too crowded, it's kind of like people too, right? When you get too crowded, you want to stop the cells from dividing. And so that's why it's density dependent. When you have too many cells, you stop each other. And again, that's not in the cell per se. It's kind of secreted, right? It's signaling of cells across cells. Just like growth factors, it's communication between cells. There's also this thing called anchorage dependence. And this sounds crazy, but all it does is just that you need to have an anchor for the cell. So let me just show you on this. Anchorage dependence just means that the cells have to have some surface, right? If there's no surface, then it doesn't, not going to divide above that. So it's kind of related to the density dependence, because once the cell forms a single layer, right, if there was a hole in it, then it's a density dependence process. While there's a hole, I can divide. But when there's no hole, now it's completely full basically, there's no more anchor to go up onto, then the cell stops dividing. Okay. Again, this is having to do with how you inhibit the proliferation of cells that you don't want. Now, in cancer, you guys know what cancer is, right? That's really important. But in cancer, this is relating back to cells now and disease and stuff like that, you have a abnormality with that inhibition process, right? So when you guys hear cancer, most of you are just saying, oh, there's just like too much cells and tumors, right? Turns out, though, it's a defect in inhibition. That's really important, okay? Cancer is a defect in inhibiting cell growth, okay? It's not excessive proliferation in that sense. It's excessive proliferation in the sense that you can't inhibit regularly. So in other words, regularly, the cells are going to tell each other to stop growing. But in cancer, that signal is mutated. Some DNA was messed up so that you don't get that inhibitory signal. And that's why in this case, you know, usually you have density-dependent inhibition and anchorage, right? So when it gets to here, it stops. It doesn't divide anymore, right? But in cancerous cells, it just keeps growing. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Okay, so that's what cancer is. So let me, instead of giving you a lot of detail, let me just give you just that. So this I kind of already told you about. These are checkpoints. You just go through the checkpoint. Okay, so in cancer, this is what happens. So even without the extra growth factor, so remember, growth factor is going to tell the cells to grow, right? Right? But even without those guys, cancers can divide. They just kind of divide on their own, right? Not only that, but usually cells are going to only divide maybe 20, 50 cycles, right? And then they're kind of finished, right? Like skin cells, they're going to die. But cancers, actually, they don't die on their own. They just keep growing. They keep growing and growing and growing. So they evade cell death, basically, right? Now, you have different types of cancers. So, Anthony will talk about this in a little bit of detail, but it turns out there's actually benign tumors who don't really survive on a different site, and then these things called malignant tumors, which you can grow, kind of spread to other organs, right? Then it becomes a bad cancer. So if the cancer doesn't do anything, it's okay. If it does, you know, there's a process where it's called metastasis, where you spread the cancer onto the blood vessels, and then it's really bad. That is really yabai, because you're like, whoa, shit, like it's going everywhere. Okay? All right, so let me give you these questions. I know I should have given you more time, but fortunately this is what I have, but I will at least give you the answers. So think of it, think of them a little bit amongst yourselves, and then we have 4 or 5 minutes to... I'm sorry, it was a little bit rushed at the end, but... But next time I can also go back and kind of start a little mini review here as well. So think about what these guys are. So why don't we just go through them as a group since we have less time. Number one, so if you have 20 duplicated chromosomes, how many centromeres are there? Anybody?
14.
Huh?
14.
Why do you say that? Right, good idea. So the key here is that it's duplicated already. Okay, so the centromeres are going to join the duplicated chromosomes together. You're almost there, almost correct. So if it's joining the duplicated ones together, that means if it's already duplicated, there's 20 duplicated ones, then there's only 20 centromeres that needs to join them together. But you got the right idea. You need to have them duplicated. And then once it's duplicated, the centromeres join the duplicated parts together. So that's the idea. Okay, number two. Some cells have several nuclei per cell. So in other words, there are cells where you artificially or whatever push nuclei into them. How could such multinucleated just means having more than one nucleus, cells be explained? Anybody? So one. Oh, anyways. Anybody have the... How would you get more than one nucleus in a cell?
They don't divide.
What is it?
They don't divide.
Exactly. So what's the answer?
A.
Right. Okay. So exactly. So they underwent the mitosis process, just like you were saying, and then cytokinesis doesn't happen. So guess what? The cells doesn't divide into two cells, but it had an extra, you know, mitosis process where it got two nuclei. It can't be the other stuff because, I mean, you know, this has nothing to do with, I mean, this one has nothing to do with the actual process itself. It definitely should not go more cytokinesis, then it's just going to divide the cell even more. And extra mitosis plus extra cytokinesis, that's still going to give you one nucleus per cell. So just like Colo said, you're going to have replication of that DNA, but no cytokinesis. So this relies on knowing what cytokinesis means. Yes. Good job. Okay, and then how is plant cytokinesis different from animal cytokinesis? Anybody? I kind of just talked about this. So. Right, Ingrid, what
well, it's kind of self-explanatory, but animals just like divide plants, and plants their cell walls are made of carbohydrates, so you can't like actually tear them apart, so they're supposed to form a plate to kind of divide the two cells.
Perfect, perfect. Exactly what she said. Paying attention very, very attention in class. Yeah, so that's exactly what it is. And even if you don't know the answer, then you can go and look at the other ones and say, well, I mean, I don't have time to go through each one, but they're just not right. So the one that's correct is this one, which says it's actually going to build the new cell wall using vesicles on the metaphase plate, and the animal cells instead, they form this cleavage field. Okay? And finally, cancers, right? I just talked about a little bit. So cancers tend to over-proliferate, right? So what's the other thing that characterizes a cancer cells? Which of the following? Exactly. Exactly. So you guys are A-plus students. Perfect. So again, I'll show you the answers. But basically, the cancerous cells, they over-proliferate and they don't die. That's the thing. Because if they over-proliferate, 20, 50 cycles later, they die. That's cool. That's cool. But because you have an uncontrolled growth, coupled with the fact that they're not inhibiting themselves, coupled with the fact that they don't die, right? So it's because they have certain DNA defects in them that allows them to keep replicating over and over without death. That's what is really the big problem. And of course, it's not, you know, they don't have inability to form spindle. They're still going to divide, so, you know, not going to have a defect in the metaphase plate. And then A is kind of tempting, right? Could you have changes in the order of cell cycle, but actually they don't. Actually, they just keep following the same process, but they just divide uncontrollably, and they don't die. Yeah. So great. So hopefully this is clear. And again, have a good golden week. And.